Welcome to Catholics Across the Aisle, the podcast of the Florida Conference of Catholic Bishops, offering commentary on public policy and civic life. This is Michael Sheedy, Executive Director of the conference. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Catholics Across the Aisle. I'm Michael Sheedy, Executive Director at the Florida Conference of Catholic Bishops. I'm very pleased today to be joined by Barbara Samuels. She's the President of Catholics for Freedom of Religion. Barbara, thanks for joining me today on this important topic.
I am so glad to be with you today, and this is my favorite topic. So ready to speak with you.
Good, good. Religious liberty, freedom of religion. Well, Barbara, so glad that you've joined us. But Barbara, how did you come to be involved in the work of Catholics for Freedom of Religion?
Well, I had never been interested in politics or discussing freedoms or even learning much about them. Like most Americans, I was very complacent. We live in a country with untold riches. We have immense freedoms. And I was very happy. And then all of a sudden, I started hearing some things that I didn't, that made me question. And then when I heard this Health and Human Service mandate, which denies conscience to millions of Americans, I knew that I had to do something. I could not sit back. I knew that it was up to the laity to be involved. And as I discussed this with my friends, they agreed. But you know, one thing that I think really helped me to be ready for this, because I'm very committed, as you can tell, and very passionate about this. But a few years before this, I had contact with the St. John's Bible out of Collegeville. Have you ever heard of the St. John's Bible? Beautiful hand calligraphy, amazing, amazing work of art. When the first volume of it was presented to Pope Benedict, he said, "This is a work for the ages." And it's been compared to the Sistine Chapel because of the art and the study that went into it and the research that went into it. So if you look up the St. John's Bible, well, it's a long story, but I ended up knowing someone who worked with that St. John's Bible program who visited my house with a volume of the Bible. So she was in my house visiting, and I said to her, "Could I have a look at the Bible?" And she said, "Yes." She said, "I'll go put it on your dining room table." So I'm working around the house. She said, "Come on in and have a look." I went in, and she had opened it to creation. And there was this amazing illumination of the 7 days. And she started explaining to me the coloring and the use of gold and the illuminate. And the tears just started rolling down my cheeks. And I did not expect that at all. And that opened a new part in my spiritual life and in my spiritual understanding. And I think that really helped to prepare me to be ready for God to lead me in this direction.
That's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. That's very personal, amazing. But it's also inspiring to know how God reached you and prepared you and maybe anointed you or opened the doors to greater service. How beautiful.
Yeah.
Maybe we should just start sort of in the beginning and understanding, like giving people a framework for how that's been established in law. It's something that obviously we Americans have long had established in law, but might have lost sight or may not remember our civics lessons from way back. Maybe you could just help us to remember, like, where does this all grounded?
Well, if we start in the beginning, our religious freedom comes from natural law. Our founders believed that it comes from God's inherent rights to each of his beings. And so this is a natural law that is discoverable by reason. It's not written down in any one particular place, just by reason and by history. They believed in natural law. And we were blessed that this country was founded on people who believed, men and women, who believed in natural law. However, before this country had religious freedom, we had a lot of religious intolerance and religious persecution. People believe, as I did, that the first founders in this country came to establish religious freedom. And that's not correct. They came to escape persecution. They didn't come to establish a plurality of religions. They believed that their colony and their religion would be safe and would succeed if only that proscribed religion were practiced. So in our early colonies, people were persecuted, people were tortured, people were sent forth and banished from their colonies for preaching or teaching anything other than the chartered religion of that colony. There were certain religions that were chartered within the colonies. And when you read back the history and you see Baptists seem to be the ones that were persecuted the most, Baptist ministers beaten, jailed, fined, imprisoned. There had to be secret churches if your religion was not the religion of your colony. So it took many years as our country developed, and it took many years for the anti-Catholic prejudice that was brought with these new settlers to our country, their anti-Catholic prejudice. It took years for all of this to settle in and to kind of like, I picture a pot and you're cooking something that's going to be really good in the end, but some of the ingredients you put in by themselves could be really not good at all. It took a long time for tolerance for religion and for a plurality of religions to develop in this country, so that by the time of the Revolutionary War and the writing of our Constitution, so that we would have a more perfect union, it took time for those things to develop to the point where Americans in their mind wanted religious freedom for all faiths. And so that's how our religious freedom came about, slowly, often painfully, but definitely came about in this country, even for Catholics.
Well, then maybe we should just reflect a little bit on what happened. You know, as our Constitution was established, I guess the First Amendment includes free exercise clause and the Establishment Clause. If we had to describe that nice amalgam of good policies, what would we say about it? What can you say? What would you observe?
Well, it is so interesting. And I wish I were a scholar. If I were starting all over again, instead of studying accounting and being an accounting professor and a CPA, I would love to just spend a career studying the Constitution and the founding of this nation. Because you're talking about the First Amendment to the Constitution. When our Constitution was signed, there was great disagreement among the representatives from their different colonies, because the colonies believed so many different things. It is, and many of the founders believed that it was a miracle that they could come together in that constitutional convention and make the compromises necessary to form a stronger nation through a stronger constitution, and to balance all of the beliefs and the practices and the hard-held beliefs of these different colonies. So when they did and they had the Constitution would not have been signed if Thomas Jefferson had not made a promise that he would, once the Constitution had been signed, he would work for a Bill of Rights, which would emphasize religious freedom, freedom of speech, but especially religious freedom. So that's why we have the Bill of Rights, because originally the original Constitution was supposed to cover all of our natural rights without naming them all. So it was a complicated meeting of the minds that brought about the Constitution and then that brought about our Bill of Rights. But when we look at the Bill of Rights and we look at the first one of the Bill of Rights, the First Amendment that gives us our five freedoms, that guards our five freedoms, the very first freedom is freedom of religion. And then after freedom of religion comes the other freedoms that we need in order to practice our faith, freedom of speech, so that we can discuss our beliefs, so that our priests and our ministers can preach, freedom of speech, so that we can go out on the street corner if we choose and evangelize, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, so that we can write about our religion, we can print the Bibles, we can print whatever books we need for worship. freedom of assembly, etc. All of these, freedom of the press, all of these support freedom of religion. So those five are together. And as Thomas Jefferson said, anything that breaches one of those freedoms breaches them all. And you can see how that happens. For example, in the Mall of America in Minneapolis this past week, where a man was stopped for wearing a t-shirt that said Jesus saves, and it said Jesus is the only way. And he was stopped by the mall security, who said, "Sir, you have to take that t-shirt off because it's offending people. It's religion. You're talking about Jesus. Jesus is religion, and that is offensive to people. You cannot shop in this mall unless you take the t-shirt off." And the man said to the security guard, he said, "I didn't speak to anyone. I didn't say anything." And they said, "It doesn't matter. The fact that you're wearing that shirt is religious evangelization, basically. And we don't allow religious solicitation." That's the word they used. So we see how important those five freedoms in that First Amendment are to us being able to practice our faith. There are people now who believe that the Bible should be edited because they say there are phrases in the Bible that are this, that, the other thing, that are evil, that will confuse people, that are, anyway, without getting into all the terminology, the Bible is under great attack now. So we need those five freedoms, and people need to know those five freedoms.
So Barbara, if we were looking at, say, from the period of the, you know, just post-Revolutionary War to now, what are some of like the notable historical developments that have transpired, say, in the United States around religious liberty?
I have 5 pages of notes here, but I don't have that timeline. But I can tell you in general, you know, what I know is that before the Revolutionary War, we had the first Great Awakening here in this country. And we had preachers like George Whitefield, who traveled the United States speaking to Americans everywhere and convincing the colonists that God was intended to reach everyone's life, that God cared about them, even if they weren't nobility, even if they weren't the wealthy of the countries that their forefathers came from. The common man, these preachers brought God to the common man. And many people think that preaching enabled our revolution to happen and to be successful. And after that, we had periods where the country was more religious, less religious, more church attending, less. But basically, it was always in what we would consider a good direction. So that in 1950, the United States achieved its high point of what they call religiosity, people attending church, people, you know, glad to say, "I belong to this church or that church, or I practice this faith or that faith." That happened in the 50s. And after that, we started a really precipitous decline. And, you know, there are many reasons for that that we could go into, but it brings us to where we are now. When we started this ministry, this Catholics for Freedom of Religion, which is an educational ministry within the Catholic Church, when we started it, the reason we started it was because the government issued a mandate, the Health and Human Services mandate signed by Kathleen Sebelius, that said every American employer with over 50 employees must provide, as part of their health insurance, must provide abortifacient drugs, contraception, sterilization, etc. When I heard that, and my Catholic friends heard that, we said, "Whoa, wait a minute. We were raised on the belief that if you take freedom of speech from one American, you take it from all. So if you take freedom of conscience from millions of Americans, you certainly have taken it from all." So when we started this, and thank heaven, our bishop, I'm in the Diocese of Rockville Center at the time, our bishop, John Murphy, was so encouraging and so supportive of our work. And we would go out into parishes where we were invited to speak. And in many of those parishes, then the people in the parish would form a Catholics for Freedom of Religion chapter to continue our work in their parish. But we had people come to the initial meetings in the parish who would say to us, "What do you mean religious freedom? There's no problem with religious freedom. I can go to church every Sunday. No one's stopping me from going to church every Sunday. So why are we bothering with this?" And unfortunately, to this day, that persists in the Catholic Church. We are complacent and compliant. And so when the Catholic churches and every church is said to be non-essential, we lock up our churches too easily and we walk away with very, very little questioning. And it's because people don't understand the basic facts of their rights to religious freedom. And they don't understand how important freedom of conscience, religious freedom, is to all of our freedoms surviving. There has been no country in the world that has given up religious freedom where other freedoms survive: freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom of women to be educated and to be an important part of society. Religious freedom, freedom of conscience, is crucial. It's the first of our natural rights.
I know that conscience rights have long been an important part of the public policy debate here in Florida. We have some pretty good precedent in law with respect to not having to participate in abortion, objectionable family planning services. No one has to participate in executions here in Florida. And there are also our protections if someone disagrees who's a healthcare provider with some decisions made at the end of life as well. So we have some good precedent to protect it. But I can admit that in my time here, there have been some issues that have pressed upon that freedom, and people have tried to circumvent it, particularly institutional health ministries of the church have had to face legislation that would have curtailed that religious freedom. And it's funny when people hear about this, where they think, well, the first question people ask about an issue is like, say, the contraceptive mandate. Well, if I don't really have a problem with contraception, I may not want to protect your conscience or your ability to argue about it. Or I'm with you. If I'm with you, I'll fight for your conscience. But if I'm not, I don't really care about your conscience. It's a little bit of, I don't know, too much of a dismissive attitude, I think. Or we try to call balls and strikes on our own. And, well, do I agree with that? Rather than just recognizing the importance of the principle that, you know, conscience is where people encounter God, and it's they're where they are freest and before their maker. And if you can't be true to God and yourself, then, you know, you're really, what kind of life do you have, really? And I've got a lot of great martyrs too, for, you know, I guess all the martyrs, you could say, took a stand for their religions.
But what you're describing is exactly what we see. You know, I go to church, and when I can, I go to daily mass and so forth, and know many, many wonderful people who are just so ardent about their Catholic faith, but they have no education about the foundation of our country being set upon those natural rights and conscience being the first one. So, yes, I'm not willing to protect a Jewish delicatessen. Maybe I'm not willing to go to the mat to protect them from not having to sell pork, right? Because it's not important to me. But I know the principle behind it, and I will protect that principle and defend that principle of freedom of conscience. So what you're seeing and what I'm seeing and what we have been seeing for 10 years as our volunteers go out to teach is a very dangerous and very threatening lack of knowledge and understanding of the basic foundations of our country, that we were founded on the Judeo-Christian ethic, that our founders, even though they weren't all church attendees and so forth, but our founders believed in the Bible as the most important and valuable book in the world. They believed in a provident being, and they believed in a final judgment, an individual final judgment, where every man must stand before God and answer for what he has done and what he has failed to do. And because they believed those things, they believed that man's conscience must be free. That government, it was Reverend Leland, one of our founders, who you don't hear about very much unless you study the founding of our country. He said, if government can stand instead of man at that final judgment and ask and answer for what a man has done, then let government be in control of man's conscience. Otherwise, let man be free. And that's what our founders believed. The men, the women who founded our country, that's what they believed. And they wanted a country where you and I and everyone was free to follow their conscience in the service of their God without interference of the government. So they wanted, as Thomas Jefferson said, they wanted separation of church and state. However, that phrase by Thomas Jefferson has been misused so that almost 100% of Americans don't know the actual meaning of that phrase, that it was meant to protect conscience and the practice of religion by individuals and churches, and not meant to keep church and religion and morals out of the public space.
Right. We should say more about that. I think you're right. That is one of the most misunderstood concepts among Americans when it comes to our civic life. I think separation of church and state, people try to say, you're religious, you have no business speaking in a state or a public venue. And the truth is, everyone has the freedom to participate in our democracy, in our government, and in the public square to present ideas. And that's what the church does in the legislative arena. And we propose ideas that we think will help promote the common good and the good of our society. And they may be controversial, but we think they're going to help promote a flourishing society. And I think that there's a recognition that the state really cannot control the inner workings of religion. That's a healthy separation. And we also respect the integrity of our government. While we may disagree, we may have to disagree like other citizens do in a civil way. That's just so sadly misunderstood.
Dr. Martin Luther King, hearing what you say, would agree, because he said the church must now and then be reminded that it is not the master of the state nor its slave, but it is the conscience of the state to guide it. And that says it 100%, that religion and morals must be out there in the public square. One of our founders said our Constitution is made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly unsuitable for the governance of any other. Constantly, if you go around Washington, D.C., and you look at the memorials, and you look at everything, our founding fathers knew that without the control of morals in each individual, that we could not sustain the kind of magnificent individual freedom that this country was founded upon. And so separation of church and state, we actually do a lecture called The Two Big Lies. And the two big lies are the misapplication of separation of church and state. That's the first one. And the second one is that God has been taken out of our public schools. And we talk about those because those are things almost everyone needs an understanding of. And it makes a difference in people's lives. The first time I ever gave a talk about separation of church and state, I started the talk by saying, how many of you in this audience have heard of separation of church and state? And almost all the hands went up. How many of you, have read this in the Constitution? And always some hands go up. And then I would say, well, that was a trick question because, separation of churches, and I would say it's not in the Constitution. And then I would go on and explain. I had to stop doing that because I was embarrassing too many people. Because too many people, they've heard separation of church and state drummed into them. They think it must be in the Constitution, and they believe that. We have had religious tell us that. We've had priests, teachers, parents, you name it. Separation of church and state is, I believe, the most effective anti-God propaganda in this country.
Mm. Wow. Well, thank you for continuing to spread the word that that's not the case and shed light on the actual case. So would you want to say a little bit more about that other big lie, just about God not being present in public schools, and just things for parents to be aware of, or grandparents and even students to know about?
Well, when we started Catholics for Freedom of Religion, we never thought we'd be talking to students. But very early on, when we started speaking at parishes, people would say to us, our children and our grandchildren don't know this. Can you teach them? And we were like, well, first of all, we're learning ourselves as we go. And secondly, we're figuring out how to teach other people. But we took it on right away because we realized how important it was. So we actually have a program people can see on our website that is Students of Faith. And what it does is it explains that our teachers are not allowed to lead prayer or initiate prayer in the public schools because teachers are hired by the school districts. They're considered agents of the state. But the students have constitutional rights and rights that have been protected in so many court decisions. Students have the right to pray at many times during the day, as long as it is student-initiated, student-led, not disruptive. So when my accounting exam comes in front of me, I can't stand up and say, oh, Lord, please help me. I didn't study enough last night, and disrupt everything. But I can bow my head and fold my hands at my desk and say a prayer. Or if I'm at lunchtime and I want to pray before a meal. Or we had a group of young students on Long Island in an elementary school who were saying a prayer at their lunch table in the cafeteria. One of the students' grandmothers was in the hospital, very sick. They were praying for her. The principal came over and said, what are you doing? What are you doing? They said, we're praying for so-and-so's grandmother. The principal said, you can't do that here. And the students said, but we want very much to pray for her grandmother, who's very sick. The principal said, all right, you can go up on the stage behind the curtain where no one can see you and pray. Now, that principal was very, very wrong. And if the students went home and told a parent who had some knowledge of this, they would know that. And they would be up at the school nicely and kindly, but firmly explaining these students' rights. Another student who came to one of our events and said, when we asked for questions afterwards, she said, and she was a young girl, and she said, I like to pray the rosary at lunch, but the teacher on lunch duty that day told me I had to put my rosary away, and if she ever sees it again, she'll take my rosary away and I'll have to go to the principal. Well, her parents, the student's parents, looked down at their child like they had seen a ghost. She had never told her parents what happened. That child had a right to pray every day. As long as she's not disruptive, she had a right to pray. Students have a right to wear t-shirts with religious messages. They have a right to wear religious jewelry. They have a right to have Right to Life clubs. They have a right to have Bible clubs. They can have a Catholic club. All of these things are protected in law and with many court decisions for our students. And what people don't know also is that there are more than a dozen wonderful law firms in the United States. You have one here in Florida, maybe more than one, but we have worked with Alliance Defending Freedom, with First Liberty, with Liberty Count, with the Thomas More Society. They've been wonderful. These law firms will come in, no charge to you, and they will defend you. And often we had a case on Long Island where they came in. An evangelical student wanted to start an interreligious club after school, and the school district kept putting it off. And finally, he was told, no, you're never going to be able to do this because it's religious. The mother called me and she said, we're not Catholic, but I saw your sign in a church in town. Will you help me? And I said, of course, if we can help you, we will, of course. She told me the situation. I gave her the name of three law firms. I said, choose whichever one. So she called First Liberty, and they came from Texas. They had lawyers in Manhattan who zoomed themselves out to Long Island that same week. met with her, talked to the son, sent a very nice instructive letter to the school district about denying the students' rights to this after-school club, and gave the school district 3 days to comply before they went any further. And they also included another page of all the similar cases that they had handled on Long Island. So the school said, oh, well, yeah, right, our mistake. However, that school was still not. They didn't treat that student's club fairly. We found out later on they did not treat them like they treated the science club, the, you know, the LGBT, the whatever. They didn't treat him the way they should have. But we have to know that, and we have to fight for it. We can't be complacent and compliant. We must stand up.
Catholics for Freedom of Religion is doing an excellent job where it can to raise awareness and highlight the importance of religious freedom. I think that it's fair to say that the bishops of the United States have also seen the importance of raising awareness in this area. They've undertaken some new initiatives that may be worth some commentary, perhaps like the what was once the Fortnight for Freedom. Now we have a Week for Religious Freedom, I think, that we're beginning to celebrate on an annual basis around special martyrdom dates of, say, St. John Fisher and St. Thomas More. Usually over the summer, I guess late June, early July, as we approach the 4th of July. We also have Religious Freedom Day celebrated in many jurisdictions, and you all are very instrumental in highlighting that particular day, January 16th, which just passed this year, coincided with Martin Luther King Jr. Day. What should our listeners know about some of these events?
Well, they should follow those events, and they should help their parish priest, because when the bishops first started the Fortnight for Freedom, I was visiting the tiny parish where I grew up out in Ohio, and I was talking to the parish priest, and he had never heard of it. And he called me later on that day after Sunday Mass was over and everything. He called me. He said, I'm embarrassed to say, but could you tell me what that's all about? And he said, we receive so many things that we need to pay attention to, and sometimes we miss important things. So Catholic, lay Catholics, have to understand our priests can't do everything. They have so many things that are required of them. So help them. Read about Religious Freedom Day. Read about Religious Freedom Week now in the Catholic Church. It's no longer fortnight, as you said. It's Religious Freedom Week. Read about it, and then go up and talk to the deacon or talk to your pastor and tell them, I would like to help with this. I would like to help raise awareness in the parish. You can hand out flyers. It can go in the bulletin for a couple of weeks ahead of time. Some parishes have a parish picnic during Religious Freedom Week. It's a nice time of year. Some have films. Some have a pizza night where they will show a film about religious freedom. And there are many good ones. There are all kinds of ways you can hand out special prayer cards. We have a beautiful little prayer card. We've handed out thousands and thousands and thousands of them. A beautiful little prayer card to Mary Immaculate, the patroness of our nation, asking her to hold our nation in the same hands that held the infant Jesus and protected him. So there are so many things, but we need to not put this whole burden on our bishops and our pastors. We have to understand our rights. And we as lay Catholics have to defend them. We have to teach them to our children and grandchildren. We have to be courageous, as Professor George said when he spoke at a rally that we had for the Fortnight of Freedom on Long Island. We were thrilled that Professor George came to speak. As he said,
that's Robbie George from Princeton University, if I recall.
I cannot call him Bobby George. Yes. Professor Bobby George. Yes. Yes, it was magnificent. It was magnificent to have him there. But he talked about the time of easy Catholicism is over. We must be courageous, and we must not be afraid to be Catholic and to stand up for the teachings of Christ and the teachings of the Catholic Church. And so we laity, that's on us. It's not on our pastors. They are there to help us in so many ways. But it is up to us also to do our share of the work. And in this case, we have a big share of the work that needs to be done.
Indeed. Well, Barbara, this has been very interesting. I think very enlightening for listeners. What would be a good final thought, or what would you want to leave folks with, or what have we not touched on that you think we should emphasize before we conclude our conversation here?
Well, you know what? We touched on the two prongs find big lies, and that's very important. But also, I would encourage people to go to our website, because every week we have a well-researched, basically a lesson right on the front page of our website. And our website, cffor.org, people can go there. And we send these lessons out to many, many parishes that have requested them, and they put them in their bulletins. The best educated people in this country on religious freedom are those bulletin editors and secretaries. We hear back from them all the time saying, I love these articles. These lessons teach me things I never knew. I print them out. We discuss them at the parish office. We take them to our children. We send them to our grandchildren away at college, etc. So I would really, really, really hope that people would go to our website, cffor.org, and look at those on the front page. And also, they can pray the Rosary for America, which is linked on that front page.
Oh, great. Great, great. Well, Barbara, thank you and the entire team at Catholics for Freedom of Religion for all your good work these many years. May that work continue to flourish and prosper, really for the good of our church and for our society. So thanks for your time today. Listeners, give our thanks to Barbara Samuels, President of Catholics for Freedom of Religion.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.